Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Mommy Beta Podcast. This is episode number 53, and this is the place where we talk about what's going on over at mommybeta.com and in our lives in general. We're four new mommies beta testing parenthood, and today we have three of the four mommies on the line. We have Alex, and we are welcoming back Natalie, who just gave birth to her second little darling baby, and I'll let Natalie do the introduction of her in just a few minutes, and we'll be talking about breastfeeding with less plastic. We have some discussion around iPads and kids and infants. We're going to talk about VBACs and if dads are really happier than moms. So I wanted to first off let Natalie introduce her little baby girl to us, tell us a little bit about how she's doing, and then we'll jump into the news.
All right. Yes, I gave birth to a girl. I know I've said several times on this podcast that I swore up and down that I was having a boy because I thought I was. So it was the biggest surprise ever. In fact, when they pulled her out, they thought she was a boy at first because the umbilical cord was wrapped between her legs. So they said, "It's a boy." And we're like, "Yep, we knew that."
Oh, my goodness.
And then they turned her over and they said, "No, wait, what is this? This is a girl." And my husband and I looked at each other in complete shock. Like, really? We had a girl? And I still feel that way. I still can't believe I have one of each. So her name is Ava Elizabeth Morris. She was 6 pounds, 12 ounces. So she was a teeny little thing, especially compared to my 8-pounder, which was my first.
My goodness.
And she's very healthy and very sweet. And thankfully, we don't have any, you know, issues like colic or anything like that. She's just calm as can be. She does not get that from me. Her brother was the same way. I have very calm babies, I guess. So I'm going to quit while I'm ahead.
Oh,
was Clayton
amazing.
A calm baby?
His mom says he was. Yeah. She says that he slept through the night right away and was always pretty calm. But his sister was not. She was she didn't sleep quite as well, and she was a bit harder. So I thought maybe this one would be my challenge. Maybe, I mean, sure, she's challenging me in other ways. And she will, I'm sure, as she grows up. And when I get to makeup and periods and cell phones, I'm going to have a completely different thing to say
about
that.
I've heard the girl drama starts at kindergarten. Sorry to break it to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess Alex and Jennifer can tell me, because they've got little girls who are already insisting on what they wear and looks pretty, aren't you?
It takes 25 minutes to get her dressed sometimes. Like, really, Reese? I've started just to leave two outfits out and say, "Okay, sweetie, when you're ready, come get me with an outfit. I walk out of the room and she'll come find me when she's ready."
She takes that long to choose.
Yeah, I don't. She's playing and she's just not ready to get ready, and it's not worth me forcing her.
Yeah. So I can't wait for that. And, you know, I didn't have a shred of girl clothes, not one pink thing, not one dress, not one bow, nothing. And, you know, I know you guys kind of tease me about being the one who doesn't find out the gender of my babies. And, you know, that was a bit of a disadvantage. She had to, for 2 or 3 days before we went shopping and had presents start to arrive, that she was in Miles old clothes, which were ducks and monkeys. But the one thing about, if you're on the fence about finding out about the gender of your baby, one good thing that I will say about that is, one, it's a beautiful surprise, one that you'll never have again. And two, you don't have any expectations of your kids when they come out. You haven't been daydreaming about them as a boy or as a girl. So you just completely get to know them as a brand new thing. Like, oh, you're a girl, you know, so show me who you are. And I really love that about the whole experience, because I had no expectation of either child. And so to get to know them and fall in love with them as a completely new person. And I don't plan to do this again. So I may not fall in love like that ever again in my life.
Well, that's beautiful, Nat. That's really interesting. That's one of the reasons I've always found out what I'm having, because I want to be able to picture what my life is going to be like. But I like the idea of being able to really get to know them for themselves instead of what I've had in my head. That's an intriguing concept.
You're thinking pink or blue, and you think in superheroes or bows and dresses and princesses.
Right.
And you think, oh, I wonder if they'll like this or I wonder if they'll like that. And I don't have any expectation one way or the other. And it's nice to buy dresses. And, I have some issues with the princess stuff, but, you know, I'll get past it. and it's a fun experience, but it's not one that I had daydreamed about. So it's all new to me. So, yeah, it is. It's been such a beautiful experience. And to be honest, if I'm really honest with myself, I wasn't sure that I wanted a girl, just because I was used to having a boy and I felt comfortable with that. And like I said, in my dreams, it was a boy. So I just sort of engaged with that idea. And so because it's a brand new surprise, I fall in love with her in a way that I couldn't ever have anticipated. And I had written about this many times on Mommy Beta about whether or not, you know, you have room in your heart for two. And it's a challenge. It really is a challenge to show them both attention and make them both feel special, especially with my toddler, because he notices. But the answer is yes, there is room in your heart for two.
I never thought there wouldn't be room and it wouldn't be exactly the same. And I think because my mom, she had four kids and raised us and by herself, and she was just so good about showing us equal attention and hugging us all and kissing us. And so I was the only girl. And so my mom and I have that special bond, but I never felt like she loved me more, loved my brothers more than me. And she just did such a good job. And I think as a parent, that is your job, to just make it seem as seamless as possible, that the love is 100% for both.
And it breaks my heart when I can see him sort of feeling threatened. I mean, he's only 21 months. He'll be 22 months this weekend. And so, of course, that's going to be threatening to him when he has this new... And he loves her. He kisses her head all the time. But, you know, when he sees us have affection towards her, I can see it in his eyes. And especially when his grandmothers hold her, that's devastating to him because his grandmothers are his world. And the other day she was laying on my chest and she lifted her head up because she wanted to feed, and she lifted it up pretty high. And I was really impressed because she hasn't done any tummy time yet because she still has her umbilical cord on. And I said, "Good job, Ava. Good job lifting your head." And he looked at me and lifted his chin like he was lifting his head for attention too. And it just broke my heart that he was like, "Look at me, mommy, look at me." And
that breaks right my heart.
Yeah. So, I mean, everyone has to go through it, right? Every child has this at some point in their life. So, I don't want to
ultimately it's traumatized. You know, they're going to need to learn to share the attention, whether it's with a sibling or, you know, a coworker. So it's a good lesson for him, but it's got to be hard to see it.
It's hard to watch. It'll be interesting to see how Dom cares, you know, carries that way too, because these little kids are used to being the center of our world and having every need anticipated and cared for. And now, you know, he has to wait a little bit. And it's hard for me to think of how she needs things. And like the other day, I was trying to bathe one and feed the other, and it was crazy town. And so I put her in the pack and play, and she cried for, you know, I want to say just a few minutes while I went in and wiped his butt because he's potty training. And I would have never let Miles cry that long, you know, because he made a peep and I was right there. I was a new mom. Right. And now with two, you just can't, you know, they both have to wait their turns.
Yeah. And I've read that, it's good to kind of fill the toddler's need. If you can fill the toddler's need before you fill the baby's need, because the baby doesn't really know he's being, or she's being, you know, ignored or whatnot, but the toddler does.
Yeah.
I've read that too.
You know, I think that's a good thing to do.
That's an interesting way to put it. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah, that, you know, it's not always possible. And you do need to teach Miles. He's going to have to wait sometimes. But in general, you know, it's easier to deal with to cope with the baby crying in the background than the toddler kicking and screaming at your legs.
And I bet it's a lot easier to listen to the baby cry because it's only for a couple of minutes and you've been through it before. So it's not panic. I'm sure panic doesn't arise through your body when you hear the baby cry.
A little bit still, though. She sits up a lot. Mm-hmm. She's got a we asked the doctor if it was acid reflux, and he said, no, just, you know, normal gas. But she's little, and I have milk in abundance. I am like a dairy farm. And so she's spitting up so much, so I get nervous that she might choke on it or something. Right. So, you know, when I can sort of, because she cries so seldom, when she does cry, I do want to just at least look at her. So I'll bring him, even if he's got a poopy butt. You know, he just pooped on the toilet, and I have to just sort of carry him over and then carry him back and wipe his butt afterwards. So it's aerobic, I'll tell you that. My baby weight is going fast because I'm running up and down my stairs and running after one while nursing another and pumping my brains out. It's crazy town.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I want to hear about more of this crazy town as soon as you have time to write more.
Yeah, and I want to write my birthing story because it's kind of a fun story. I don't know. I think everyone likes to talk about their birthing story, right?
Oh, totally. And you did write a piece this week about the high contrast app for infants, and that kind of leads into our next story. It was this article in the Wall Street Journal about your toddler's brain on an iPad and how is it good or is it scary that they kind of zoom in and focus on it so intently. So how do you guys feel about that?
Alex, you want to go first?
Sure. You know, I kind of have mixed feelings just because it reminds me of the television. But I'm leaning towards more that it's educational and it's good for her because it's not all the time. And she's interacting with it. So whether it's her ABC Elmo application or her Hello Elmo, where Elmo calls and says hi and she talks back to him, which is pretty funny. She has conversations with him. She's interacting versus the TV. She's sitting there. I mean, she loves TV. I don't know what child doesn't, but she'll just sit there and stare. And it freaks me out. I'm like, okay, it's been 15 minutes. Let's go do something else. And I think in the article, one of the moms was saying she had to wean her child from the iPad because he was playing with it so much. And I thought about that. And I do a couple minutes before, you know, after about 10, 20 minutes, they say, okay, Reese, I'm going to take it away. We're going to do something else. And I take it away and we do something else. And that makes me feel a little bit better just because I don't want her to become addicted to it. And I don't want it just, you know, I don't want to give it to her every time I need to entertain her. I think she should learn to entertain herself. So that's how I feel.
Yeah. And I like to draw the line between time that he spends watching videos and time that he spends doing activities, because I really do believe that the activities are learning building. But just sometimes, you know, we sit there and we put the Avengers on Netflix or, you know, Curious George, or he likes to watch music videos, and then he's just watching, and then it's not different than television. So, you know, sometimes I kind of like to make that distinction, like, okay, he's been on the iPad for too long watching, you know, basically it's a small TV.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I don't know if you saw the 60 Minutes piece about autism and mm-hmm. the iPad a couple months ago.
Maybe yeah, I did.
About a year ago. And it really hit home for me how, as a learning tool, it's just a completely different world, and we just don't have enough data yet. They showed a child who was autistic who was, they gave them the same activity on a piece of paper and they kept looking away. And then the same sort of counting activity or image recognition activity on an iPad, and they did not look away. And you can see that with children. If you just sort of flip through a coloring book, they're like, yeah, that's interesting, but I want to see other things. And in the iPad, they're locked and loaded when it comes to activities that are learning based. Wouldn't you guys say?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
different
yeah.
Different than a coloring book.
We actually have a drawing application on the iPad, so I pull that up. And actually, Reese will pull it up and just start drawing. And when I bring out her color crayons, it's a shorter activity.
Yeah, I mean, Dominic will sit and do – there's a couple different puzzle apps that we have on the iPhone, and he would sit and do it for an hour if I let him. He would go through all the puzzles twice. And he has wooden puzzles here at home, and you pull those out occasionally and play with them, but it's not anything like he does with the iPad, the iPhone. And growing up, I had this kind of headset thing that had these cartridges. It was much lower tech than the iPad, but, it was all kind of science based. And I remember learning about solar systems and dinosaurs, and I would wear this thing around for hours at a time. And, you know, if it was my child, I would maybe be like, huh, you know, what is this thing that she's doing for so long? Maybe it's not a good thing. But looking back, I think it was great because I was learning all kinds of stuff about these things that I probably wouldn't have gotten as much detailed information on in school, or wouldn't have had the patience to read about it in books. So I think, you know, that we should kind of keep an open mind to the technology to a large extent, because we don't know, you know, exactly what they're getting from it. You know, I think we should rein it in when it's excessive. But I think that they really do learn a lot.
I think so too. And just like anything else in parenting, it's about balance. So if you let your kid play on the iPad 24/7 and that's all they're doing, probably not a good thing. But, you know, if they're playing on it throughout the day, but you're also, you know, taking her out or taking him out for activities and, you know, doing things with them, I think it's educational. And it, you and know, this it supplements
will be their
there.
Life, right? Like yeah. they are going to have a lot of technology and then, you know, hopefully they will have outdoor play as well and other stimulating activities, but they do need to adjust to technology in the world that they live in right now.
Right. Agreed.
And they need to learn to turn it off when they're adults. So hopefully maybe we're going to give them some of the tools to, you know, use it for a while and then kind of move on to something else. Because I know that's something that Sean and I even have trouble with. You know, we sit on our laptops at night on the couch and it would be nice to maybe not have that technology there. So maybe they'll be better at turning it off.
I wonder if every married couple does that, because as soon as we have a routine. Reese goes to bed. I'm finishing up dinner. He's finishing up work. We sit down and eat. And then we turn on our favorite shows because we never get to indulge in that. And our computers are on our laps.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we do.
And then we look at the time. I'm like, oh my God, it's already 10 o'clock. We should go to bed.
Marriage. I know.
But that's what marriage is. We try to talk as soon as he gets home for about 15 minutes before he fully takes over being on dad duty.
That's nice. You know, and there are ways I've thought about this recently with potty training because, you know, we're still giving him a present every time he goes in the potty, which is starting to get ridiculous. and so I thought about this app that I reviewed. What was it called? We'll post it in the show notes. It was iRewards Chart. That's what it's called. And I liked the idea of working towards something so that you get a present. So I thought maybe we should start that with potty training. And I thought maybe the iPad could be another thing where, like, you clean your room or, you know, because he can put away his toys now before he goes to bed. He understands the concept of that. Or if you, you know, help with Ava or whatever, then you get a star and then you get so many stars and you get a present, or you get so many stars and you get iPad time. And that seems to work for a lot of parents of older children, is that they earn their iPad time instead of just entitled to it. Mm-hmm. So as he gets older, I'm considering that kind of thing. It may be a little early for something incentive-based like that. But, you know, I think if he can sort of visually see his chart, you know, accident-free, you get this kind of thing. I'm considering that. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see if he's old enough to get that, because a friend was talking about using something similar for potty training. And my gut feeling was like, well, you know, and this little boy's closer to 3. I was like, I don't know if they'll get it yet, but it would be interesting to know.
Yeah, I think I'm on the earlier side of that. I've just sort of been in my head tossing it around, especially mm-hmm. because I just can't be giving him little, you know, trinkets every time he goes.
We do M&Ms. Maybe he'll go for M&Ms.
Oh, that might be something. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because only about half the time he remembers he's supposed to get an M&M. So I had to tell Sean this morning, I was like, don't remind him that he needs the M&M, because eventually we're going to need to wean him off the M&Ms.
Yeah.
Because we started that because he wasn't telling us. And now we've had a couple of breakthroughs where he's telling us when we're out and about that he needs to go. So I think once we get that habit really established, we'll tell the M&Ms bye-bye.
Yeah, he yells. He'll yell, PB in the potty! Yeah, present!
Oh my gosh.
Like, triumphant. Like, just like, yeah, PB in the potty!
I wish Dominic's was more like that. Dominic is like, when he has to go, he goes, oh no, PB, oh no, poo-poo. And I don't know why he says, oh no, you know? like, it's a scary thing for
him. Probably because he doesn't want a log to come down his pants.
He still talks about that. Oh, the reading bug. Oh. But anyway, we want to take a little bit of time to thank our sponsor for today. So, Nat, do you want to tell us a little bit about Gazelle?
Sure. Gazelle is a great way to sell your used consumer electronics and get cash for them. So before you go upgrading to a new iPhone or iPad or whatever child-friendly gadget you're planning to get, make sure you visit gazelle.com, because they might have some cash for you for your old gadget. It's really simple. You go to Gazelle, that's GAZELL.com. You see what your gadget's worth and you just get a free offer. It doesn't cost you anything to look it up. They'll ship your gadgets for free. From you to them, and then you'll get paid super fast, either by Amazon gift card or a PayPal payment or a check in the mail. They specifically like, you know, things like computers and phones and cameras. You know, they have several categories of gadgets that they accept, so make sure that you go and check it out. And every gadget worth $1 or more qualifies for free shipping. So that's that's so easy to not have to think about shipping is, you know, just one less thing. So remember, you know, your gadgets lose their value over time. So go to gazelle.com to find the best offer and find out what your gadget is worth. And when you're checking out, make sure you tell them that the Mommy Beta podcast sent you, because that's true. We did. And we like the, we like and we need the credit. So thank you very much. Gazelle.com.
Thanks, Gazelle. So on to technology of a different sort, birthing technology. I finally got around to writing my post, and I think I wrote it sometime last week, about why I've chosen not to go for a VBAC and to do a scheduled C-section. And this is something that it took me a while to write, mostly because I was a little worried about what people would say, because I know people get pretty fired up about this, and people can be very opinionated about, you know, why it's important to try for a VBAC. And I've even, you know, by telling this story to friends, no one's been aggressive with me, but I've had several people be like, well, you know, you really do have an option for a VBAC, and are you sure you really want to do the C-section? And, you know, there's a little bit of judgment in their voices. And it really comes down to me that I don't want to be disappointed in the birth of this baby. And I wasn't disappointed with Nick's birth. It was wonderful, and I accepted it, but I really feel like if I were to go for the VBAC this time, I'd hire a doula. I'd really like go hardcore. I'd probably even switch OBs because my OB doesn't seem super into the VBAC. And I just think if I made all of that extra effort to having the VBAC and it didn't happen and I still ended up getting a C-section, I would be disappointed. And I don't want that. So that was what really kind of made my decision, especially because my OB told me I probably only have about a 10% chance of having a successful VBAC, because my first time around, after 27 hours, I had dilated to 9 centimeters, and then that 1 centimeter lip that was left actually started to swell, so I started to go backward. So it wasn't even that, because a lot of people have written comments like, oh, maybe your OB was just impatient, and you know, if you would have waited longer, you would have been able to have the successful vaginal birth. But I really don't think that's the case for me. So I've made this decision, and I'm actually really happy with it. Now that I've made the decision, I'm kind of excited by the fact that I know when we're going to the hospital, and I can kind of plan everything and make sure Nick's childcare is covered. So I think it's a good thing in the long run. I'm a little worried about recovery, but aside from that, this has been an easy decision for me. So what do you girls think?
I'm just so proud of you, Nat, for just honoring what's best for you and your family. That's really hard to do, especially because you sounded a little nervous about writing the post just because of what others would think. But I'm happy that you sound happy and this is the right choice for you.
Now, I have a question, because I read through these comments and most of them were very encouraging. In fact,
yeah, they were. I was happy about that.
And it seems to me like an easy decision to make, but you know, like, oh, it seems like you just know when you know and you go in. And to me, that sounds great, because I am super impatient. Waiting for labor is torture for me. But your mom, I think it's your mom who posts as Nana.
Is yeah.
Okay. So she posted something about the great loss. What is that?
Oh, you know what? I didn't even see that she had written a comment. Let me pull it up right now.
Okay. She says that she felt something. She watched the video that you had posted, and she said that she immediately felt this great loss when she delivered by C-section. And I guess that was something that was referred to in the video, the family-centered C-section video. And so I was just wondering what that was, if that's something common that people with C-section feel like all of a sudden they don't have the baby there and it's a
yeah, I think she's probably talking about I don't think it's necessarily like a thing, but I think what she's talking about is, if you watch the video that I think it's Mindy at Graceful for Grace posted about the family-centered C-section. It's a really interesting concept. And what the main part that I liked about it was that they put the baby directly on mom's chest after they pull him out of your abdomen. And for me, that was what I felt like I missed with Nick's birth. I really wanted them to pull him out and put him directly on my chest. And I think that's what my mom's referring to, is how they, with the C-section, is they typically just take the baby away. And you know, dad gets to hold him for a minute and, you know, you can take a little picture with dad and the baby, but you don't get to touch them. You don't get to, you know, you don't get to hold them. It's not the same. And it is a loss to me that I didn't get to do that. That's the one thing that, I wish I could have. And I'm actually going to ask my OB about this particular video was taken in the UK, but I know they've done births like this in the US. I had gotten some feedback from some people on my personal Facebook wall saying they think that there are strict OR guidelines that might prohibit this from happening in California. But I'm definitely going to ask my OB about it because I feel like that is the one thing with the C-section that I really didn't feel like I got. I want to put the baby on my chest. I want to, you know, see if he wants to suckle right away because it was probably at least a half an hour, maybe 45 minutes before I got to hold him. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the big thing with the C-section for me. For the other part with the family-centered C-section was that you got to see them. They'd lower the drape and you see them pulling the baby out of your abdomen. I don't think I could do that. And I know my husband couldn't do that. So I'm not interested in that. It's more of just that immediate contact afterward. So yeah. I think that's something I'll definitely look into. Have you, Alex, given any consideration to what you would want to do for your second?
You know, it was only after reading your post that I did, and I looked into it a little bit. I would first, before considering anything, I'd want to talk to my doctor to find out what my chances are. Similar to you, if it was less than 10%, I don't think I would be up for it because I'd rather just plan and know, and it's not worth it to me. But if there was a 50% chance, because mine was an emergency C-section, I was dilating fully. It was just after they gave me Pitocin, and they couldn't find her heartbeat that they decided to do a C-section. So I think if there was more than 50% or at least 50%, then my doctor was okay with it, then I would try it.
Yeah, and I think that fetal distress is one of those reasons that you do have a higher chance the second time around because that's not necessarily going to happen the second time around. So right. And, you know, you may have the option.
Right, and if it did, I was thinking, because you had a good point. I don't want to be disappointed. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was 50% and I did choose to try it, I don't think I would be disappointed because I've already had an emergency C-section and I know what's involved. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a very individual choice. And I'm glad that we have the choice that, you know, our insurance companies don't tell us we have to do it one way or another. Or, you know, I think, you know, kind of back in the day, if you had a C-section once, you kind of always had a C-section, especially when they used to do the C-section, the incision vertically instead of horizontally. Basically, if you have a vertical C-section, you can't have a VBAC because of the risk for uterine rupture. So I'm glad that we live in a day and age where we have this option.
Absolutely.
So August 1st.
Some people don't, though. I have a girlfriend who said that her hospital doesn't do it.
They just, really?
And she lives in L.A.
Interesting.
It's her second baby. She scheduled it she's just a few weeks away from delivering. She's like, my hospital doesn't do VBAC, so this is my...
I've never heard that.
No. Yeah. So. That's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah. But I'm sure if she really wanted one, she would have been able to go to a midwife or, you know, do something.
Right, she could find another.
But right. Still, that's a bummer.
Yeah, when I was delivering Ava, my midwife had said, she's like, yeah, we have actually quite a few deliveries today that are just not going the way that some babies just not responding to delivery today. So quite a few who had to go to C-section. And she said one was twins where the first twin was vaginal and the second twin was C-section. And she said that's pretty common. I had never heard that sometimes.
No, that would be awful. Yeah,
that's awful.
Yeah, you sort of, I don't know how you frame that in your head.
And you have to recover from both and take care of twins at the same time.
That sounds awful. I will never forget.
I feel like twins should always be C-section. I don't know. That's just me. But
now, every time I think of vaginal birth, I think of you saying, it feels like somebody hit you down there with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. I dilated all the way without an epidural. This time I dilated all the way to 10. And let me tell you what that feels like. Someone slicing you in half with a saw.
Did you have an epidural?
I did, but I was pretty much all the way dilated by the time. I didn't know it. But yeah, I was like, I'm just going to wait and see how this goes. And then once the contractions started coming on hard and fast every minute or so, I was like, I need it. Get it right now. I'm going to die. And because I hadn't sort of prepared for it, they had to give me fluids, intravenous fluids. So I had to wait another 20 minutes before I could get the epidural after I had decided on it. So I was like, Clayton, get a lasso, get in the hallway and find that guy with his epidural cart, get him in here at gunpoint. I don't care what you have to do.
That's definitely the worst part. Once you've decided you want it and you have to wait to get it, that for me was the worst part of the birth.
It was so hard. And I was in the tub. I was on the ball. I was doing everything I could. And I was just like biting down on a towel. You know, it was, yeah, that's pain. That's pain. Man.
You guys are braver than I am. I endured, you know, a lot of contractions. I think it was probably contractions for 6 hours, and they were pretty bad. But as soon as I was able to get into a room, I asked for the epidural right away, just because I knew I didn't want to be put in that position where I was in so much pain, and I was wishing I'd gotten it earlier.
Yeah.
I didn't think that I had wished that I'd gotten it earlier. You know, I'm glad I know what it's like, but. When I wanted it, I wanted it. It was crazy. And my poor husband, he couldn't even look me in the eye.
Yeah, Sean still like cringes every time we talk about it. So I think he's really relieved we're doing the C-section.
You know what's so funny about that is because like to us, I kind of want to talk about my birth. Like I've just been through something so monumental that I want to chat about it a lot, and he does not.
Oh, really? Yeah, I'm not sure to talk about it with me. But
I mean, he'll talk about it a little and, you know, that kind of thing. But to me, it's like I've just been through a wedding, you know, like let's just continue to talk about how beautiful it was. And they're over it pretty fast. And I'm like, do you know what I've been through?
Seriously, do you know what I just did? Seriously, come on.
Well, you can talk to us all about it when you write your birth story, which I can't wait for.
I will. Well, before we do that, why don't we thank our next show sponsor, Bake Me a Wish? We actually got some cakes from Bake Me a Wish from some friends for having our little baby girl, and they did not go uneaten. And again, we had carrot cakes. So people are listening to the podcast, I guess, and knowing that I love thanks so much. And then we also had one for Mother's Day. Bake Me a Wish is a website where you can go and order a cake, and it's guaranteed to arrive for the occasion of which you order it. So you don't have to worry that someone's birthday is going to pass and then they get a cake the next day and then they think that you didn't think about them at all. So they have a great variety of cakes of all sorts, sizes, and flavors, and they are delicious. I promise you this. And fresh and packaged in a really nice way so that they come. You don't have to worry that you have a happy birthday cake that's smushed on one side. That would be terrible. And it's really affordable. So make sure you head on over to bakemeawish.com, order yourself a cake for whatever. Father's Day is coming up. That's a good occasion. Graduations, whatever. Belated Mother's Day. That would be fine. And tell them that the Mommy Beta podcast sent you because, again, it's true. Bakemeawish.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you. So cakes bring happiness, right? So does parenting bring happiness? According to a new study, it may bring more happiness to dads than to moms. I thought this article was really interesting. Babbel posted a story that's related to a story that was on Jezebel.com that basically says that, okay, so there have been studies that show that that married people are happier than unmarried people, and that parents are happier than people without children. And now there's a new study that says that dads are happier than moms. So they're kind of the winners of everything. The dads, in theory, are the happiest people on the planet. And the rationalization behind this is that you get all that kind of extra boost from the joy of raising children. I thought it was interesting. They say that raising children brings more joy than misery, and that it's a fine line between the two, which I totally agree with. But that dads get this extra boost of joy without all of the additional housework and stress that motherhood can bring. So what do you girls think about that?
I think amen to that. I was glad to see it sort of, I guess, delineated in this way, because a lot of times I do feel like, you know, I have these two beautiful children. How come I'm stressed out? And then when it was put this way. I thought, oh, yeah, that's right. Because even if, you know, as much as our husbands want to help, they're not going to think of everything that we need to think of or that we do. They would if they had to, I'm sure. There are plenty of single dads who get it done. But, you know, still, it's us who know where the wipes go and where the, you know, diaper cream is kept and where we keep the wet bags and all of that stuff. Like, we keep that in our head like a database. And so that can be an extra responsibility, which doesn't necessarily equate to happiness. Although the Wall Street Journal posted an article, or the New York Times, rather, similar to this last year. And one caveat that they did point out was that dads who are divorced are the least happy demographic because they have to live away from their children. So they know what they're missing out of on, which is interesting.
That is interesting. And another thing that came up in the story that I thought was interesting, it says, you know, most people that this author knows, both parents work, but that still mom tends to be the one who's, you know, throwing laundry in and cooking dinner and the those tasks, those typical woman tasks from the days of old, are still kind of holding on, where, you know, dads have definitely stepped it up and are definitely doing more than they ever have before. But moms are still doing a big share of the housework and working outside of the house. So that kind of lends itself to the idea that, you know, dads might have the edge on happiness because when they come home from work, maybe they get to enjoy their children a little bit more than mom, who has to worry about getting dinner on the table and, you know, making sure there's clean diapers and clean bibs and all of those things. So, Alex, what do you think?
There's certainly something to be said about that when both parents are working at home. I mean, working out of home. When I was working, about 30 hours a week when Reese was really small and she wasn't crawling yet, I was able to work from home. You know, mostly worked when she was napping or when I could just set her down. But I was still doing 100% of the housework and the cooking and the grocery shopping. And it was hard and I was unhappy. I was like, this is not okay. Josh comes home, you know, and he's finishing up work and I wanted him to take the baby. But I never said this to him. I just thought in his head he would come home and take over. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until I had the conversation and I realized I have, you know, guys just don't think like women. We mm-hmm. know that. And they need to be told and I need to express what I need and what I want or how I, you know, just set expectations. Right. And as soon as I did, everything changed and it was amazing. So as soon as he walked in, he would take over and I would have time to make dinner because I love cooking. But I resented having to cook when I had to do everything else.
Right.
And now that I'm not working and I'm at home full time with Reese, it's the same thing. It's because taking care of her is a full time job. And you know what? It's taxing. Some days I'm so tired. And he's great. He comes home as soon as he walks in the door, before he even takes off his backpack, he picks her up, gives her a big hug, and he's like, okay, mommy needs her space, and he takes her away and plays. And it is just so sweet, you know, and I love to see them interact. But I would say we're great. We're super happy, but it's because we communicate. And you know, he's had a bad day where he rarely has these, but if it's really, really bad, I'm prepared, and he shoots me a text. And, you know, then I give him his space, and that rarely happens. So I think it's just the communication, letting each other know what we need at the time. It's been great. But yeah, before I said anything, I was doing all the work and I just did it that way. I thought that was my job. And, you know, it's both of our jobs. We're both parents.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about resentment on this show before. And I liked one of the posts that Natalie wrote about how, you know, she needed to sort of scale back the things that she was doing because otherwise she resented when Sean was trying to relax. Mm-hmm. And Sean has every right to relax as much as the rest of us. But you're right, if we don't communicate, there's so much resentment that goes along with it. And dads don't necessarily feel that. So that's why they're, you know, reporting all of this happiness and we're reporting all of this stress.
But I think if we took, you know, a little more initiative and did more communicating, because I think generally women are better at it, but did some more communicating, it would help a little. I'm not saying it's going to make everyone happy.
Yeah, it's not going to make them remember that the diapers need to be washed.
Right.
But, you know, we won't resent it so much when we do it.
Yeah.
In that case.
Yep. And I've given him certain jobs, like the diaper genie. That's his job. and, you know, the garbage. So the things that I really don't like doing, I will farm out to him. And he's, you know, there aren't that many. So he's, you know, I'm sure
he's so happy he can take out these diapers. Yeah. He's so happy to deal with the crisis.
He even said, no one likes doing this, but I'll do it. You know, so he's great. He does it. And yeah, I don't have to deal with it. But yeah, it's too funny.
We're lucky we have dads who will pitch in. Like Sean loves to do the dishes, so he gets to do the dishes.
What?
Much better at giving baths than I am. Dominic doesn't freak out nearly as much as when I try to wash his hair. So he definitely has his jobs. He likes to tease that my only job is laundry, and he says, "You do the laundry, and Daddy will take care of everything else."
Which is definitely
not the case.
That's
but
funny.
I enjoy doing the laundry, so we kind of try to play to our strengths, and that's worked out for us.
Oh, you guys make a great team. I hate doing dishes, but I do them, and I'm not a huge fan of the laundry, although I love when they come out of the dryer, but I don't like folding.
Yeah, I don't mind folding as long as Nick keeps his hands off my folded piles of clothes.
Oh yeah, it's a game for Reese. She sees a folded pile and comes and destroys it.
Yeah, so we have a rule that he's allowed to play in the laundry basket when it's got all the just the clean clothes unfolded. Like he can mm-hmm. dump them out on the floor, he can swim in them, he can do whatever he wants. But if they're folded on the couch where I do all my folding, he is not allowed to touch them. And most of the time, he's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Reese doesn't listen to that yet. So I just fold when she's napping.
I was just thinking today about our gendered roles because I know that Miles is going to have to mow the lawn with his dad. And I was thinking, oh, well, is Ava going to do laundry with me? And how are we going to teach her to fold the right way, which is my way?
That's another reason why I don't let Sean do the laundry is because he doesn't fold things the way I like him to.
Yeah, I'm pretty particular about that.
Well, it can be your little victory one day when you share that you've properly taught Ava how to fold a sweater.
Well, it will be.
In between now and then, do you have anything else you'd like to share as a little victory today?
Well, yeah. I mean, everything with a newborn is a little victory, right? Just taking a shower or going to the bathroom. But I did have a little victory the other day when a neighbor of ours, who's Clayton's good friend, had a birthday, so he took him out for drinks. And then I had to get both babies down to bed by myself, which was a challenge, let me tell you. And especially because Ava's still having sponge baths, but I wanted to, you know, bathe the both of them and get them both in their jammies and then get them down for a nap. And so I was literally just running from one place to the next. And thankfully, she can't roll over yet, but, you know, you can't leave her. Anywhere. So I had to put her in her pack and play and then run and get Miles and put his jammies on and then run back and make sure she hadn't spit herself up and then run back to him and he brushed his teeth. And so I literally was just running back and forth. And then there was a moment where both kids were down and asleep and I had succeeded. And I wanted to high five myself to death.
That is a big victory, not a little victory.
That's huge. I wish I could see this on video.
It sounds exhausting.
I you know what, if it were on video, it would have like one of those little, it would, we'd speed it up and it'd be like doo 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 doo. Natalie walking back and forth and naked Miles running out and walking back with a spit up cloth.
Oh my gosh.
Man. Motherhood.
Well, congratulations.
And I bet you looked beautiful doing it.
I bet you did.
It probably was leaking milk.
Oh god. Oh, I'm not looking forward to that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you for sharing that, Nat, with us. That's a big victory for you, and congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
And we do want to remind our listeners that we are having a giveaway on the site right now. Alex, can you tell us a little bit about the giveaway?
Yes, it's sponsored by Peter Rabbit Organics Baby Food. They're the little fruit and veggie pouches, which my daughter is obsessed with. I love them because they are sold in BPA-free resealable pouches. There's no sugar added, no preservatives or artificial ingredients. So I feel really good when I'm in a hurry. I can just grab something and go. You know, most of the time I still enjoy cooking for her. But when I do have to go and I'm in a hurry, just stick them in my bag and give them to her. And she begs for them now. So anyways, we're giving one lucky reader one box of 12 assorted fruit and veggie packs.
Awesome. So if you want to win some veggie packs from Peter Rabbit Organics, go to mommybeta.com and you can enter there. And that giveaway goes through, do we have another week or so left on that?
You know, Nick, another week, yeah, Tuesday.
Okay.
Tuesday.
So make sure to enter before Tuesday, and you might get to have some veggie pouches for your little one. So you can also reach out to us on mommybeta.com, facebook.com/mommybeta, and tell us what you're thinking about these days, and you know, share with us news articles that you think we might want to discuss on the podcast, or you can tweet us at mommybeta, or always send us an email at mb@mommybeta.com. So it was great chatting with you ladies today, and I'm looking forward to the next podcast.
Ditto.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.